I was going to start teaching on something entirely different this morning. I really was. And the subject, the next time, Lord willing, is going to be on our timeless Creator. I mean, it's an interesting study when you get to thinking about an entity that has lived without time and only established time for a temporary period. And yet that's what we have. And there's a lot connected to that. And it gets into the realm of the glory of God. You know, we've been kind of skirting the edges on it for the last 22 weeks, just talking about the glory of God. But we haven't actually gotten into the glory of God at all. The glory of God is absolutely His magnificence and His capabilities. It's the stuff about God that just absolutely overwhelm you if you could comprehend them. We haven't even begun to scratch the surface. The reason no man can see God and live is because God is light and He is power. And even after He covered Moses with His hand, there was enough power emanating that he was glowing. He was supercharged. Charged up like a battery, man. Come down, he's glowing. I'll bet you the only reason his face was glowing is because the rest of it was down behind the rock. You know, otherwise his hands would have been glowing, anything else exposed probably. But I'd really love to get into a study on the timelessness of God. Brother Selden loves those movies that are time-related. I really get a kick out of them, too, especially the ones that are intricate. You know, there's a bunch of them that they can make this time travel kind of appear real, but there's so many things that they leave out. Well, that won't work because of this, and you can't do that because of this. And they kind of justify it, but it's all like a fairy tale, you know. He establishes time. But you realize that He doesn't establish that for Himself. I mean, He picks, this is going to happen when, but He's not subject to time in anything. I mean, He's just there. Anyway, so He had some other plans, and the other plan is He gave me another piece of this puzzle this morning when I sat down and started to study this and put it together. And it has to do with some people get this stuff about the glory of God and some don't get it. Get what? How do you get it? How do you define getting it? And is that something that anybody can explain to somebody else? And if there's one thing that Brother Mark and I have been frustrated about is trying to explain this to somebody, and no matter how long you talk or what you say, you get all done, nothing you said had any effect on them whatsoever, and it was just right over their head. What is that? Can you actually identify it? Is there some way that this thing can get a little more real to us, something we can grasp, something tangible that we can say, okay, now I got it. I know when I get it and when I don't get it and what it is there is to get. Anyway, the previous 22 lessons were an introduction on the glory of God. And in a brief, which we're going to try to do this morning, the glory of God seems to be the focus of our entire universe. Everything in this universe seems to focus on that one single thing. Well, you can't focus on the glory of God without focusing on God. But God does not draw all the attention just to Himself. It's an abstract thing that God does that says, all of these things demonstrate who I am. And the idea is that when you see how great a things He's done, then you'll appreciate His greatness. And it works the same for us. You take superheroes, football, baseball, you know, stock car racing, I don't care what it is. You take superheroes. And you know what you're attracted to? You're attracted to the things they accomplished first. And that's what makes them great. Now, there is no new theme on this earth. Everything that we have, every personality, every feeling, every thought, every desire comes from God. There isn't anything brand new. You haven't invented anything new. So if you got it from God and all of mankind is drawn towards superheroes based on what they do, then you start to begin to understand what the glory of God is all about. And so when it says over there, the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament showeth His handiwork, day in a day utter a speech, night in a night showeth knowledge, it's not about the heavens. It's not about the greatness of the stars, the pictures that we showed a while back about you know, the solar system and all the magnificence that's out there and the color and the black holes and the suns, you know, being created and the stars being created and the stuff exploding and going on out there, all that stuff, and the size of it. That's not what it's about. It's about the one that made it. Just like the car race is about the guy that won, it ain't about the race. And it becomes about him because he was the winner. The driver's the one that gets the credit. The stars don't get the credit. The planets don't get the credit. The one that makes them is supposed to get the credit. Now that's what this thing about the glory of God is about. And we know that the whole universe is centered around that thing. Not only that, we also know that every lost entity that has existed that God has created, lost, including Satan and all the fallen angels. Every single thing that God made, the entire existence comes down to one focal point, and that is the glory of God. Every knee shall bend, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God. That's where it comes back to. Also, every action of every saved person is directed to the glory of God. Over in 1 Corinthians, whatsoever you do, in word or deed, whether you eat or drink, do all to the glory of God. So if everything we know about, everything that exists, everything is directed toward the glory of God, believe me when I tell you there's more to the glory of God than any of us even imagine. We don't get it yet. And if our education for the last how many ever years you've been saved, if your education had been directed toward the glory of God, you'd have a sense of appreciation for your Creator you can't even imagine. And it comes right down to simply bragging on Him, talking of His wondrous works, magnifying Him and everything that He has done, and you can't magnify what He's done without magnifying Him. If our concentration had been on those things, we'd be different people today. The whole church would be different. The entire world would be different right now. You say, why isn't that happening? Because God's got other plans. He says, it's needful that offenses come, but woe unto the man by whom they come. God says in that verse right there, that little verse, He says, Jesus Christ is going to die. He's going to have to suffer punishment. He's going to be beat up. He's going to be scourged. Somebody's going to nail Him to that cross. Somebody's going to make those decisions. What He actually says is, it don't have to be you. Woe unto the man by whom they come. It is needful that offenses come, but you don't see anything in that thing where God says, okay, it's predestinated, Pilate's going to do this thing. And believe me, if God predestinated Pilate to do that and He created him for that purpose, you'd see something different. There's only one of them got even close to that, and that was Judas. Judas Iscariot. One of you is a devil. Anyway, God answers prayers for His glory. Call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver thee. Thou shalt glorify me. Originally, I began to think when I read that verse and thought about my wife and all the stuff that she and I had gone through and you guys had gone through, because believe me, I can't think of what the Lord put her through without thinking of those prayer meetings and the things that have happened in this church since then. I can't think of Brother Willie. I can't think of Sister Kay. I can't think of Sister Jerry. I don't care what it is. Everything has begun to change because it all focuses back on the one that does it all. That's why. And I can see His hand in stuff now that I didn't see before. And there's a real simple explanation why. We'll get to it in a minute. Anyway, also, we are to declare His glory. Do you know that? Look over in 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 16. When was the last time you declared His glory? You know how many people living today even could tell you what the glory of God is? You know why I had such a hard time understanding the glory of God at the beginning? Because nobody ever taught me. All of my Christian education through all that stuff omitted the glory of God. Even when you start talking about eschatology and all the rest of that stuff and the omnipotence of God, you know, and the omnipresence and everything else, there wasn't any study on the glory of God. It's void from Christian education. And there's a reason for it. Anyway, First Chronicles 16, verse 23 to 25. Sing unto the Lord, all the earth. Show forth from day to day his salvation. Declare his glory among the heathen, his marvelous works among all nations. For great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised. He is also to be feared above all gods. So when was the last time you declared his glory to anybody? Well, I'm still not sure what it is. Well, you ought to understand it by now. If nothing else, just that explanation this morning, the glory of God are the things that he does. He was great. That's why he does them. We think about it backwards. And the reason why is because we look at everybody equal to us, and those that stand up above us, you know, kind of stick their head up above the crowd, so to speak. Then we draw attention to them, and they get there by doing certain things. In other words, somebody wins a race or somebody wins a football game. But we're drawn to people that stick their heads up a little better than us. But God's not like that. God's not great because of what he does. God's great, and that's why he does it. It's totally backwards. Anyway, instead of focusing on him, we focus on serving. That is this church age. I don't care if you say it's Laodicean or not. Everything in church is focused on serving God. And that is not what this thing should be about. Anyway, even though we're aware of the great possibility we're the Laodicean church, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. So that thou art neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. We know that. But you know what we do? We look at that like the speed limit sign says 35 and we're doing 65 and we're in a hurry. Just whoosh. That's how we treat that. We don't treat that as a warning. We treat that as a suggestion. I mean, you know, the 10 suggestions. You think those speed limit signs are a suggestion? Try to tell that to the guy pulling you over. You try to tell that to God. I'm just part of the Laodicean church. I don't have a choice. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. You know what the choice is going to be? The choice is going to be whether it's about you or about him. And that's the choice that you make that puts you in the position you're in. Anyway, if we're to glorify God in everything we do instead of making him sick, we've got to understand what it is. Have you ever thought that the things that you do make God sick? Have you ever thought that you going over there and putting together Romans and John make God sick? You ever thought singing these songs to the glory of God make him sick? Well, what do you think he's talking about then to the Laodicean church? You think it's going shopping? I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. How many times have you sung those songs with no emotion? You're neither cold or hot. There's some people that come in here and have to go to church and they're here because mama makes them. They have to sing the songs and they regret doing it. That's cold. Once in a while, you know, you get singing a song and you just get touched by it. Man, you just joy the Lord. That's hot. That middle ground, though, you're not against God. You're not really for him. You're just here. I'm supposed to be here, so here I am. You know, it's my duty to do it. We also know back in Luke 17, 18, that one leper that was healed did something real special. As they turned and went their way, they saw that they were healed, and that one guy turned and with a loud voice glorified God. Number one, you know it's possible in the flesh to glorify God. We're supposed to do everything to the glory of God somehow. Well, did he do something so special that it was that hard to do? What did he do when he turned around and glorified God that was so special that made it glorifying God? You know, he says, whoso offereth praise glorifieth me, not whoso offers thanksgiving. It is not about gratitude. In fact, like I said before, gratitude is on the wrong side of the fence. I'll show you that in a minute too. But what he said was, Lord, Master, who are you that you can do this? And the other nine, they go, huh? They didn't get it. They went off to the priest. He came back and he got on his knees and started thanking God, but something happened between when he turned around and when he got on his knees. Something happened. One that came back to glorify God and he fell on his knees, thanksgiving. It makes you think that gratitude is glorifying God, but it's not. It's absolutely not. So what is it? What is it that they didn't get? What is it that he got and the rest of them didn't? It comes down to this. You remember the story of the little girl that was washing the dishes? You remember that? That's a great story. This is what the glory of God's all about. This is it. That old guy came in there. He's a salesman, from the way I understood the story. He walked in. Mother was off doing something else, and she said, "I'll be with you in a minute." And he sat down in the living room. From the living room, he could see this little girl, about 5 years old, up on a chair washing dishes. And he watched her for a few minutes, and she was just singing and happy and washing these dishes and big old pots and pans and everything. And he got to watching that, and he went in there, and he said, "Well, isn't this job a little bit too big for you?" And she turned around with a big old smile, and she said, "Oh, no, I'm doing this for my mommy." Here's what you get out of that. Number one, you get that the girl loved her mother, didn't you? I mean, you know that. That little short little story, just that one brief moment. "Oh, no, I'm doing this for my mommy." You get that that girl was also happy for the opportunity to do that. That was not work to her. That was pure pleasure for her. You also understand that the hard work became easy because of that love. It was obvious to somebody else that the work was too hard for her. Those big pots and pans and all the rest of it, having to be up there in the chair and stuff and doing something that was really beyond her ability. But that hard work became easy. You also know that the girl's full attention was on her mother the whole time she was doing it. And then last of all, you get the impression she had a great mother, that a little girl would want to do that for, don't you? Now I'm going to show you what's going on in the church today. Same story. Man watching a little girl washing the dishes in there, gets up, walks in, says, "Little girl, isn't this job a little too hard for you?" And she turns around, begins to cry a little bit. She says, "Yeah, these pots and pans are really heavy and the water's really hot and I keep slipping on the chair. And I have a hard time getting these dishes all the way back in, and they won't stay up in the rack like they're supposed to stay up there." You know what happened? Everything changes. The girl's chores are too hard for her. You knew that when you got there. So she just confirmed what you already believed. It makes you feel sorry for her. It makes you think she's being treated unfairly. The girl's mom's unreasonable, asking a little girl or telling a little girl to do that. Mom should do it herself. Her mother's lazy. You know what the difference is? You think it's the girl loved her mother. Oh, no. Oh, no. The only difference between those two stories is, first story, the girl's attention was on her mother. The second story, the girl's attention was on herself. And that is the only difference in those stories. When your attention's on yourself, the pots get heavy. The water gets hot. Every little tiny thing that goes wrong is more of a setback for you. It's more difficult to get the job done. I need more help. You know what the guy's attention was on when he turned around and glorified God? It was on the master. Who could possibly do this? Who am I looking at? You know who his attention was on when he knelt down with thanksgiving? Back on himself. That quick. Right back on himself. Elijah, prophets of Baal. Attention on God, boy, the whole time. And when your attention's on God, you have no fear whatsoever of man. He wasn't afraid of anything. Later on, he's hiding in the cave. I only am left alone. It goes from one to the other instantly. Now let me ask you this. What are you thinking about right now? You say, nothing. I'm waiting for you to tell me what I'm thinking about. You thinking about it's your duty to be here? You've thought about that before when you come to church. I know you have. Well, I need to be there because what do the rest of Christians think? You know, well, I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be there, you know. Mm-hmm. What about what time it is? Maybe you're thinking about what a lousy lesson this is. Can't he ever teach on anything worth teaching on? You might be thinking about some of the things that I used to think about a lot. What do I need to do later? What have I got planned for this afternoon? What do I have to get done after church this week? What do I got to do next week? The stuff that I've got to get done, organize this and all that stuff. Some of you may be so bored that all you're thinking about is what else can I think about to keep my mind occupied so the time doesn't drag by an hour for a minute. If you're that way, if you're bored with church, it's because you don't appreciate who it's about. The reason you don't appreciate who it's about is because you've never been taught enough about who it's about. You know way too much about washing dishes, not enough about mommy. That's a fact. I wish I could have done something about it 20 years ago. I've been cheated. I feel like a victim. My wife listened to a message this last week. That guy was talking about stuff you wouldn't even believe it. You know, you're taking the name of the Lord, I, God, in vain if you're calling yourself a Christian and you're not suffering. Just nonsense. You're sinning if you're wearing horn-rimmed glasses. God will get you if you don't straighten out. Little girl, if you don't hurry up and wash them dishes, your mommy's going to really tan your bottom. Let me ask you, when was the last time God whipped you for doing wrong? When was it? You ought to repent in sackcloth and ashes for feeling that way about a loving God. He's never whipped you for doing wrong. Never. He does it for your profit. And it hurts him to do it. God may be bored with church, singing, praying, preaching, giving, teaching, etc. Even sick of our works. But never with his creation bragging on his son or what he's accomplished out of love for the Father. Or the effectual response of his creation, his children, to his blessings, things that make us joyful, increase our fellowship, our provision, the protection he provides, the abilities he gives us, the power he gives us to accomplish it, the plan he has for our lives, the promise of our future with him, the comfort that he gives us, and the peace that he gives us. He's never bored with hearing about those things. He's never bored with knowing we appreciate him for it. It all becomes for his glory when your thoughts are on your Creator. And as long as you're thinking about yourself, your burdens are going to be too heavy. What God put on you is going to be more difficult than you can bear. And you won't appreciate him at all because you think you deserve more than he's given you. Now that's a sad state of affairs, and Christianity has sunk right down into that because every bit of it becomes about me, what I need, what I want, how bad my life is, I don't deserve this, look at the way they're treating me, you better get to work and do more for him or else you're not doing enough, you're not praying enough, are you people? He says, pray without ceasing. How are you going to do that? You just have your thoughts on him. You know what your thoughts on him does? Man, what a sunset, God. Wait a minute, I thought you had to start out. Our Heavenly Father, in Jesus' name, this is a great sunset. That ain't praying. You know, that's just words. What he wants is he wants what's out of your heart with affection for him and what he's done for you. And as long as it's about you, it's not going to be about him. If you love him more than you love yourself, your thoughts will be of him and to him and for him. And all the rest of the glory of God will fall right in place. That's what the glory of God is all about. Now, Lord willing, next week we will start in with something about our timeless Creator. And Lord willing, if he will show us a little bit more about himself, we'll start to understand him and appreciate him for his mighty works. Let's close in prayer.